WGN, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. I haven't seen you on air in person in a long time, my friend.
I was going to say, it's been a while.
Yeah.
I was trying to think as I was walking in. I think it's been a couple years since I've been in the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been on the air many times and done a lot of call-ins. But yeah.
So the only way I could get you to be in studio was to tell you to go to the Blackhawks game, and that's how we got you in here.
Correct, yes. I have traveled to this fair city to see Connor Bedard write his book of Genesis on United Center ice. I am ready. I'm
Ooh.
Excited. Let's go.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
John Weideman could use that tonight during the broadcast.
Feel free.
Write his Genesis. I like that. Blockbuster Blake, not a lawyer, but you do cover entertainment news, and there's a lot of legal things happening in that realm. Can you just catch us at the writer's strike over? Done.
Yes.
They're working in it again, right?
A deal has been worked. They are back to work, but they have no actors to put in front of cameras.
Okay. So where's that one at? Because let's just set the scene. This was a historic double-pronged strike. You don't see that all that often.
Correct.
The writers and the actors at the same time. It seemed like they had that strength in numbers that helped propel the writer's strike to an end. A lot of people, I don't know, reading the tea leaves, thought that the Screen Actors Guild would be close behind. Well, it's been a couple weeks now.
It has. So this strike has hit day 100. That's the one thing you should take away from everything I'm about to say. This has been going on for 100 days. There have been multiple attempts at negotiation. They have failed. Most recently, in talking with one of the SAG-AFTRA members who's out west, there's both west and east.
Mm-hmm.
There are picket lines in New York and in Los Angeles. A friend of ours, actually, Rama Valuri, who is a voice actor who has worked consistently for well over a decade out there, suddenly hasn't been working, and he's gone 100 days without it. And I asked him, I said, straight up, how is this going? What's the thought? Is there hope on the horizon? Like, what is the deal? And his basic quick response was, I don't see this ending anytime soon because on the last round of negotiations, the AMPTP walked away from the table.
What's AMPTP? I'm on acronym.
Yes, sorry. The Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers,
okay.
Which is the opposite side of SAG-AFTRA, which
right.
is the Screen Actors Guild. Keep in mind, Screen Actors Guild is also backed by ACTRA, which is Canada's acting union, and Equity, which is the UK's acting union. So while they're not actively striking, they are supporting, and therefore people are not working, not just in the United States. Rama wanted to point out to me that AI was the big sticking point.
Really?
That scanning and utilizing voice and facial likeness and everything so that they can pretty much, the studio side can essentially lock it in a can and reuse it whenever they feel like it.
But that was a big victory in the writers. Why are they holding out on the actors? Because, just to put a fine point on it, writers were really worried about essentially you plug in, the internet scrapes enough of your writing. Let's say you've written 9 episodes of a show, they scrape it, and then they can just recreate your writing. The writers saw a huge victory on that front, right?
They did. The technology that is used to do that kind of reconstruction is essentially brand new.
Uh-huh.
And while it was being sort of trailblazing in the last year or so, at least on its front, now if you're an artist, you might have very different opinions about it, but that is essentially newer than the technology to scan a face, to record a voice, to do everything that you can to build up a library of data on a person essentially reconstruct them.
So that technology is already good, what you're saying.
It's existed for a long time. I mean, go all the way back to the prequel Star Wars trilogy when Christopher Lee's face was scanned and put on a stunt double's face to fight Yoda at the end of the movie.
Mm.
I mean, elements of this technology has always been sort of in play, at least as far as if you want to go back well over 20 years. But it has gotten better. It has gotten a little scarier in some films where they've recreated actors and actresses that have been long dead to appear in things that are mostly franchise-based. It has caused a massive sticking point in any form of negotiation, and it's caused them to just completely shut down.
Interesting. So this line of thought of why this would be sticking more for actors than it was resolved for the writers,
sure.
is that the technology on the writing side, generative AI, where you
right.
take previous work and literally create new work based on what they've done before, that technology is still very much in its infancy. Producers were maybe more willing to give that up as a negotiation tip because it's not there anyways yet. You're not going to write full episodes yet. But they maybe want to hold on to that as a negotiating chip against the actors longer because that technology is further advanced and maybe more able to implement today.
Correct. So take for example, Rama himself. Rama is a voice actor. The one thing they would want from Rama is his voice. And if they can lock that in, say, for a studio where he's voiced a character for 5 or 6 years, and let's say they decide they don't need him anymore,
mm.
suddenly he's worked himself out of his own job. that is where the big sticking point is for a lot of these actors and artists, and I can totally see their side of it. I can also understand that, you know, studios have kind of got this system set up where with the streaming platforms, they never built in residuals for talent. So let's say you were the star, John, of a show that ran 2 years on maybe network television or something, but then it gets picked up and it's running on Hulu. Mm-hmm. You're not getting paid every time it runs on Hulu.
Hmm.
Even if it's a fraction of a cent, you know, like maybe it becomes a real popular show in a streaming world where you should get a check, because if you were on a show that hit syndication and it played on television,
you would
get paid in perpetuity. It doesn't work like that if you did something that was maybe a streamer slash or smash hit, but had a good run when it was on television. The big examples that everyone, Rahm at least, gave was, think about Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul. Mega stars after Breaking Bad. You know, not to mention they were successful actors beforehand, but that was the big one. That's the one that everybody has binged constantly on the streaming platforms.
Right.
They've never made a penny off of any of that airing on like a Netflix or even, I believe, an AMC Plus or anything along those lines.
Well, their contracts at the time probably didn't foretell what was happening.
Correctamundo, because the, well,
you just dropped a correctamundo.
Correctamundo, John. Well, the reason for that is because streaming platforms are still seen as new media. They're not exactly new media. They've been around long enough that now is the time to go back to the table, renegotiate how this works going forward, and the studio side is being very stubborn about it.
So this is really their first negotiation in this new world.
Correct. Yes. Amundo, I guess, if you want to be really funny. But no,
I don't.
To be truly honest with you, yes, this is the first time they've been able to sit down and address this as a, look, you have all the data, you have all the metrics, you've had time to gather everything you need, you've made this aware, you know, us aware of the following things, and now this is what we want. And they say, we don't want to give that to you.
Another angle of this, which maybe is not specifically about the writers and the actors here, but was a huge court victory in August in a U.S. court in Washington, that work of art created by artificial intelligence without human input cannot be copyrighted under U.S. law. Now, this could be challenged. I wouldn't be surprised if it was and goes all the way up. So this is still a little unsettled. But a lot of artists have been praising that court ruling as perhaps a stopgap measure to the advancing of AI technologies in their jobs.
Yes, I would say, at least if you've been on, well, X, Twitter, whatever you call it these days, you know, mm-hmm. you personally call it, you might have noticed that little pieces of AI artwork maybe pop up in your timeline from time to time. Not all the time, but someone talking about how they created this over the course of X days, doing the following inputs and doing all these things. It's like, yeah, but none of that was a brushstroke.
Right.
They're really, if you're looking at it as a piece of art, you might argue there's no soul to what you just put together. The computer did all the work. All you did was put in a few inputs that sent it down a pathway to create the thing that you're now showing me on this social media timeline.
Right.
That is like the beginning of what could become a way bigger issue down the line, and why artists are so, and rightfully so, I think, protective of both their work and, in a way, whatever medium it is they work in.
Right. Well, I imagine some people will challenge and say, well, wait, companies that created the computer or the device or this code to cure and make that art should be able to copyright it. But critics would say, where is it pulling from? It's pulling from previous examples of actual work of art that has been done and is copyrighted.
Yes.
To create something quote unquote new. So this is a burgeoning field, and it'll be fascinating to follow in the legal world.
Absolutely will. Although I will say, if I see one more movie franchise through the eyes of Wes Anderson AI creation video that runs through my social media timeline, I'm gonna lose it, man. I'm gonna actually start tweeting angry. That's what I'm gonna do.
There you go.
And I don't do that. I typically do not do that.
You're a nice guy on Twitter.
I try to be.
And in real life. Blockbuster Blake, I appreciate it, okay?
Always a pleasure.
All right, Blake, we got 1 minute. Someone wanted to know, what's a movie I should see this weekend?
You have to get out and see Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon. For me, big 5-star movie, 3.5 hours long. I still can't wait to see it a second time.
And a great book.
Great book as well, yes.
And John Williams talked to the author of that book, whose name escapes me at this present moment. Do you know
it? No, me as well. Yeah.
Go to WGNradio.com to hear that conversation.